James chapter 2. I appreciate our brother James. I've said this before. Read this book and listen to it, you'll come away bleeding. He'll give you the 1-2 punch and smile while he does it. This is a book that brings us to the shoe leather of Christianity. He tells us how to live. Probably, in fact, I don't think it's probably, it's pretty certain that James is the first book in the New Testament, first book written early in the Christian church's existence. He was writing to people who were suffering. He was writing to people who had to run away, had to flee. It was either run or die because of persecution. We don't know about that. I'll be honest, I'm glad we don't, but it'd do us good to. Persecution doesn't hurt the church. It always helps the church, always. What destroys a church is what happens on the inside and what the devil can do. But when the attacks come from outside, you check it out, read the Bible. Every time it helped God's people to be persecuted. And the reason is, I believe at least one reason is because, boy, that forces them or us to get in touch with God and get help from Him. And when we get help from Him, things will be better. Not just that we'll feel better, but God will stir in our hearts a desire to serve Him even more. And I appreciate that. James is talking in chapter 2 about being subordinate, about being under, about lowering yourself, about humbling yourself. He starts the chapter by talking about respecting the flamboyant. He said, when somebody rich comes in your church and you treat them nice just because of their riches, and somebody poor or less attractive or less appealing comes in and you sort of shove them to the corner, there's a problem, he says. He deals with that for the first four verses. Then he talks about in verses 5 through 11 about representing the father. He says, your father doesn't do that way. He says he doesn't respect the flamboyant. The rich doesn't impress God. God doesn't pick out the best of the best. In fact, He does the opposite. He almost always picks out those of the lowly. And He says, since you represent the Father, since you're one of His children, you really ought to do that too. Then He talks about remembering the future. And He says, one of these days you're going to stand before Him. And what you're doing now sure is important, so make sure you do now what you'll be glad you did then when you stand before Him. Then He talks about, beginning in verse 14, about revealing the faith. He gets down to shoe leather about faith here. He mentions two different kinds of faith. Now, both are faith of a sort, which means believing. Both are real, well, I shouldn't say that, are actually faith, but they are quite different, and they have completely different results. The final end of these faiths, of these ways of believing, have total different ends and results. He talks first about a dead faith. He mentions in verse 16, verse 20, verse 26, about dead faith. That tells you a little bit about what he's trying to point out. Dead faith. Doesn't sound like it does much. In fact, it doesn't. He calls it dead faith because it accomplishes nothing. It does no good. He'll say it's no profit. It's not profitable. It does no benefit. Accomplishes nothing. And we'll discover a little bit about that in just a minute. Hopefully, we're going to be discovering some simple facts about believing. This dead faith, as I said, is already, it has little or no effect. And he will illustrate the futility, the actual futility of dead faith. The other faith he talks about is living faith. Do you see the contrast? I don't know of anything two things more contrasting than living and dead. And he did that on purpose. The dead in faith is nothing. It accomplishes nothing. It'll do no good. But the living faith is something. It's vital. It's needed. It's necessary. And it'll help you. It has a good end. And he'll illustrate that to a degree about what living faith is and how important it is. He is saying, and I'll spill the beans right here, that living faith is more than just believing facts. I hope you understand. Faith is believing. And you can believe facts. I believe in a man named Abraham Lincoln. But that affects my life hardly at all. Other than the fact that I might be impressed with some of the things I heard he did, the fact that Abraham Lincoln lived has very little effect on my life. And that is a believing of sort. It is a faith. It is a acceptance of the facts in my head. But I'm not trusting him for anything. I'm not depending on him for anything. So if you will, that is a dead faith. It accomplished very little other than giving me more information. And James talks about that kind of dead faith, but he also talks about a living faith. Now, living faith, if you want to separate the two and make it simple, living faith is more than just believing the facts. And I'll say that more than once tonight, so just hang on. Expect it. Don't be surprised if I repeat myself more than once. James did. I guess I can. Living faith is more than just believing. It's trusting, relying on, depending on. And that's what he's going to be saying here in these verses. It's more than just believing facts. And the key to these verses from verse 14 to the end of the chapter is in verse 22 where he says, "Seest thou?" Here's what he's saying. If you want to know what the difference between dead faith and living faith is, look around. Look at lives. He's talking about what we can see. He's talking about what man, listen, what man can see in you. Got a question right here. I suppose you claim to have faith. I am supposing tonight that we all claim to be saved and we all claim to love the Lord, but I want to ask you a question. Can people see that? Is it demonstrated in your life? Can they hear the way you talk and say there's something different about them? Can they hear what you say and say there's something different about them? Can they watch the way you walk? Can they see how you handle problems and say there's something different about them? They are a person of faith because I see it. One thing to say it, another thing to demonstrate it in their lives. And that's exactly what James is saying to us. Faith is more than just saying something. I can tell you anything. I can tell you I can believe in red kangaroos and tiddlywinks. But that doesn't do a bit of good. He says, you see, it's evident. Real faith, living faith, produces works. And it's a kind of works that's impossible to miss. I mean by that, it'll show up on you. It'll show up somehow that you are a person of faith. I has even said that statement, I thought of two or three people in this building. It's amazing. My mind can work more than one way at a time, I guess. About people that I think right instantly, yeah, I believe they got faith. I've seen it in them. They have displayed faith. I've seen them walk in faith. And that's what he's saying. That's what James is saying. He says, revealing your faith, let it be seen. He says, is it seen? Can people see the fact, not just what you say in your words, but then they see it in your life? Real faith is genuine faith. Real faith is trusting the Lord for our forgiveness, get me to heaven, and to get me through the day, get me through my next problem, get me through my burden right now. That's what real faith's all about, and it reveals itself. Now, there's a supposed contradiction in these verses. For our brother James keeps saying that faith must have works to be complete. That works are necessary when you're talking about faith. But our dear brother Paul seems to say the exact opposite. For he says all through his writings, and if you doubt that, listen, Romans 3:22, Romans 4:6-7, Romans 8:3, Romans 9:6, Romans 11:6, Galatians 2:16, Galatians 2:21, Galatians 5:2-4, Ephesians 2:8-9, Philippians 3:9, just a few of many places where Paul said, listen, you're saved by faith without works. With no works. And you believe that, don't you? I hope you do. That's what we believe around here. It's what I believe. I hope you do. Hope you're right, because that's right. So Paul is saying we're saved by grace through faith without works. And here James is saying, oh yeah, you need faith, but you also need works. Now, how do you reconcile those two? It's very simple. Paul is looking. Here's the point. These two fellows are not combating each other. They're comrades. Paul and James are not enemies. They are in agreement. Paul is looking before salvation, looking toward the cross, looking toward Calvary, looking toward forgiveness. And he said, there's only one way you can be saved, and that is you put your faith in Calvary and trust Jesus, and you do that without any works. If you come to Calvary, if you come to the cross saying, oh yeah, I got to believe, but I also got to work, he says, you've missed it. He says, you come to Calvary. Listen to me. You come to Calvary with only faith and faith only. And that's how you're saved. And for every person here, if you got in, that's how you got in. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourself. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Paul looks from this side of Calvary, from this side of forgiveness, and he says, you approach God by faith, and you don't bring anything. You don't bring your goodness. You don't bring your promise to do better. You come empty-handed. You come as a sinner. You come as a rotten, filthy sinner with no hope. You come by faith, and he saves you. Now, James is on the other side of salvation. He's on the other side of the cross. He's looking back. And he says to believers who have already come by Calvary, who have already passed by the cross and accepted Christ, and now they are saved. And James looks back to the cross, and he said, if you really got the goods there, if you really did get saved, there's going to be some works now. You are not saved because you worked. You got saved without works. But he said, if you got the real thing, if you exercise real faith by trusting him, now there will be something in you that will produce works, and you don't even hardly have a thing to do with it. It is him working through you. Real faith produces real works. It's a living faith. It's bubbling up inside, and you will do right. You see the difference? James is not saying, you got to keep working or you're going to lose it. You got to do right or you'll lose it. He's saying this. If you are right, you'll keep doing right. If you are saved, you'll keep acting like it, because there's something inside. That faith still works. That spirit is still in there. He is working in you, out of you, through you. So that's how the seeming contradiction is reconciled. But James, our brother, still tells us that real faith produces works. And that means if there's nothing working in me, I don't have real faith. If there's nothing in me working, Paul said that works add up to a big fat zero. James says after you get saved, works adds up to a big fat 100 because it proves that you did get saved. And both arguments are needed today. Paul is talking to people who are thinking about getting saved. And he's saying, if you trust any of your works, you're misunderstanding. If you think it's you and God, you're mistaken. You come to Him completely bankrupt. You come to Him completely helpless. You come to Him completely hopeless. With nothing I bring, I come with empty hands. Paul is dealing with people who think, listen, like the Pharisees, like most of Israel, I must keep the law for God to be pleased with me. The only way I can have favor with God is for me to do the law and all these regulations and all these rules. And if I don't keep it, God's going to be angry at me. I will fail and He won't forgive me. I won't be forgiven. I'll never see Him. Paul is saying to that type of people, oh no, you come believing and trusting alone. But James realizes the danger of someone saying, oh yeah, I got faith. Sure, I believed. Man, yeah, I believed. But there's no change in their lives. We call that easy believism nowadays, where people just pray a prayer and there's no conviction and there's no spirit, there's no repentance, and there's no conversion either. And James said, the way you know that you got it is there's something inside living. That faith in you is not dead. That faith in you is living. And James warns people just as fervently as Paul does. And he says, don't you dare look back to some little experience you think you had. If what you got then didn't change you and keep you changed and is working now, you probably didn't get it. In fact, he goes further than that. He says you didn't get it. Hope you're getting it. I ain't got to the verse yet, have I? That ain't a good sign for the rest of the evening, I guarantee you that. Look at verse 14. Could have mentioned 1 James' examination. James examines a situation. But he does more than that. He examines the person. It is as though he, if you will, grabs an imaginary person out of the air. Now, this type of person really exists. But it's kind of like we say, well, I know a man that went to the store, and so we use an illustration to make a point. That's what James is saying. Well, look in verse 14. What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works? Can faith save him? So James is talking about this. Maybe it was a real man, maybe an imaginary man, maybe he's just making a point, whatever it is. He is examining. Here's somebody who claims to have faith. And our brother James said, well, let's examine that situation. And it's almost like he comes into a courtroom scene and he examines the evidence. The man claims to have faith. The man claims to be a believer. We would say tonight, he claims to know Christ. And James said, well, let's examine it. He enters the courtroom and he examines this man who has professed to have faith. He's saying, does he really? Remember now, James is a show me book. He says, if you say something, show me. He says, if you claim to be a Christian, show me some evidence. And he deals, remember, James deals a whole lot. He doesn't deal so much with becoming a Christian as much as he does being a Christian. So he's saying here, here's this man who claims to have faith. Here's a man who says he has faith. Let's examine and let's see. So his James examination, but then we want to find James' evidence. You know what's involved with the courtroom scene? Some of you know it better than you wish you did. That means you were the one charged. You were the one guilty. You were the one on trial. But in a courtroom scene, the way that guilt or innocence is determined is somebody somewhere brings evidence. And if they caught you on video robbing the bank, they got some pretty substantial evidence. But sometimes it just may be your fingerprint. It may be you had one article in your house that was stolen. Whatever the evidence is, it is, listen, facts that prove whether you're guilty or innocent. And James says, we're going to be fair about this thing. Let's examine this man. He claims to have faith. He says he's a believer. Let's examine it. Now, what is the evidence? Here's what he says. He says he has faith. He professes to be saved. He professes to have real faith. He says he has living faith. What's the evidence? I promise you, without proof, if there is no evidence of guilt, if the courtroom is run rightly, there is no conviction. The evidence tells the facts. And the evidence reveals the outcome. So he examines this man and he brings forth the evidence and here's what he says. This man claims to be saved, but look, he has no works. Examine him. Let's look at the evidence. He says he hath faith, but hath not works. Here's a man who claims to be saved, claims to know, claims to believe, claims to be a believer, but he has no works. There is no evidence to prove that he's guilty of being a Christian. And notice what he says. Can faith save him? Now what he's really saying is, can this kind of faith save him? Here's what this man says. Oh yeah, I believe. Sure I believe. We would say today, do I believe in Jesus? Of course I do. Do I believe the Bible? Sure I do. Do I believe I need to be saved to go to heaven? Of course I do. Do I believe Jesus died on the cross for me and you got to call on him to be saved? Of course I do. Here's a man who says, I believe, I have faith, but he has no works. And James said, can that faith save him? The answer is no. Just believing it in our head doesn't save you. I'll say it again. It's trusting, relying, depending on, giving in, giving up, giving over. That trust, that's what living faith is. James is examining the evidence. And this person really has not a leg to stand on. Because real faith always, always produces works. And if works are absent, that's proof there is no faith. Hey, Jesus said the same thing. Listen, if you continue in my word, if you live like it, then are ye my disciples indeed. He said, if you continue, then are you my disciples. He is not saying you got to continue yourself or you lose it. He's saying, if you are my disciple, you will automatically continue. That's called the perseverance of the saints. And that's a very definite Bible fact. He's not saying you got to continue to stay saved. He says, if you are saved, you will continue. Now, you got to hang on tonight. We fluttering around in the kiddie pool tonight. We're getting into some pretty good meat. Jesus also said, he that entereth the kingdom is the one that doeth the will of my Father. James said, can this kind of faith save him? The kind of faith, listen, here's what he's saying. The kind of faith that doesn't change your life at all. Is that kind of faith that'll save you? No. Look in verse 15. We're still examining the evidence. How does this man live? James has already said he didn't have any works whatsoever. Listen, he gives a little bit of an illustration to prove this. If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful of the body, to the body, what doth it profit? He said, if a brother or sister be naked, number one, that doesn't mean completely naked. It means clothes that are worn or clothes that are inadequate, not enough to keep you warm, not enough to cover sufficiently. It's clothes that are lacking. It's not keeping you warm. Then he also said destitute of daily food. It simply means this person is so destitute, they don't have enough clothes. They don't have the right clothes to keep them warm, and they don't have enough food to keep them fed. Here's a person in need. And somebody comes along and says to this needy person, depart in peace. Have a good day. May the Lord bless you. And then he goes on to say, be warmed and be filled. It's more or less somebody that comes and say, boy, I sure do hope things work out for you. Well, God bless you, poor fellow. Now go on and have a good day. You know what that does for that needy person? Nothing. Doesn't help them at all. And James is saying that's what dead faith is. If I say to a needy person starving to death, bless your heart. Oh, you poor little thing, may the Lord bless you. What good's that doing them? No good at all. Me saying the words, don't do a thing, doesn't do anything to help them. And James says, somebody who says they have faith and they don't have works, it is as useless as saying, bless you, dear brother, to a needy person and not giving them something to eat. He said, it's dead. It's useless. It is no good. It accomplishes nothing. Again, he's saying all this stuff of just believing, just accepting, believing the facts. It's not enough. It's useless. And it says, give them not. They do nothing to help. They walk away with the person still cold and hungry. Look at verse 17. Even so, faith, if it have not works, is dead being alone. He said it's just like in verse 16. When you speak words, empty words, useless words of God bless you, you poor little person, to that needy person, you do no good to help them. And he said that's just like dead faith. It does no good. Look at verse 18. Yea, if a man may say, thou hast faith and I have works, show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Now, that seems kind of complicated. It's very simple if you just analyze it. James is responding to this person who says, oh, yeah, sure, I'm a believer. Sure, I believe. But their life has no proof of it. They don't live like it. There are no works. And James says, a man says, I have faith, but I don't have any works. James says, I have faith, and I'll show you my faith by how I live. If you wonder if I got faith, says James, just look at my life. And he ain't bragging. He's just saying, somebody with real faith, somebody with living faith, shows it by how they live because there's something inside. Work it out. Thou hast faith and thou have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. You'll see my faith by how I live. You'll say James is a person of faith. I can see it. I can see it. I can hear it. He shows it daily. Look at verse 19. Thou believest there's one God, thou doest well. He says, you believe in one God? Boy, that's great. You hear what he said? Thou believe. That's faith, believing. In one God, man, that's good. Because back then, especially, even though it was the New Testament time, they believed in many gods, but this person says, I don't believe in but one God. And James says, that is great. Oh, my. And then he reaches up and pops the fellow's bubble by saying, yeah, that's real good. But do you know the demons believe that too? It's fine that you believe in one God. But that doesn't mean anything. The demons believe there's one God. You know what? The demons would agree with our bylaws here at this church. The demons believe in our doctrinal statement that we have at this church. The demons believe there's one God. The demons believe in the Trinity. The demons believe in salvation by grace through faith. The demons believe in Calvary. The demons believe God created everything. The demons believe that God right now is in control of everything in this universe. The demons believe in salvation by grace through faith, plus nothing, minus nothing. They believe all that, but they sure ain't going to go to heaven because they believe it, if you will, in their head. They've never trusted. They never relied on that. And James says, this fellow who claims to have faith is saying, I believe there's one God. James says, great. So do the demons. In fact, the demons probably believe it more than you do because he said they believe it and tremble. Their faith, if you will, their believing causes them to shake in their boots because they know who God is. They are in fear of God. They know enough about God to be afraid of Him. But it's not, they aren't saved. They haven't believed on Him. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's what James is saying. He's saying it's great to believe. But that's not the kind of faith that saves you. And that's not the kind of faith that's real. That's not living faith. That's dead faith. All it does is affect your brain because they've never trusted. James is trying to get us to understand that real faith, he is saying reveal the faith. If you have faith, show it. Let it be seen by how you live. And if you're not living like it, you're not it. Look on in verse 20. But thou wilt know, O vain man. Excuse me. But wilt thou know, O vain man. You know what James is saying? He's saying, if I tell you the truth, will you listen? Will you know? Will you let me show you the truth, O vain man? Vain literally means empty. It means empty-headed. He says, will you know? Will you let me tell you? Will you let me inform you? If I tell you the truth, will you listen? Listen, oh, vain man, that faith without works is dead. I've said that over and over and over. He said, I want you to learn something. that real faith shows up in your life by you living right, living different. Does that mean we're perfect? Of course not. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what James is saying. I've mentioned that James gave an examination. He came into the courtroom and he examines this man. I mentioned that James gives some evidence. Let's look at this man's life. Let's examine the evidence. Let me go on by saying James' examples. Look in verse 21. And James gives some examples of real faith, living faith. And I don't know what time I started, and I know I got to step it up because y'all ready to quit? No. So I'll see what I can do. Not making any promises. Verse 21, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son upon the altar? James gives some examples of living faith. The first example he gives is Abraham. The second example he'll give in a minute is Rahab. You couldn't get more different people than that. Abraham was a religious man. Rahab was a harlot. Abraham was a man. Of course, Rahab was a woman. Abraham was a Jew. Rahab was a Gentile. Abraham was a leader. Rahab was a follower. You couldn't get much more different people in the world than them. But James uses both of them as an example of real living faith. Abraham showed his faith by offering his son Isaac. God came to Abraham and said, take thou thy son, thine only son, whom thou lovest, and take him to Mount Moriah and kill him. Offer him as a sacrifice. Abraham, listen, here's the word, obeyed. Wonder why he obeyed? He obeyed because he believed God. He obeyed this very difficult command because he trusted in God. I mean, you couldn't ask for a harder thing for a person to do than to kill your only son that you love. That is going to be the beginning of the nation that God has promised. And Abraham, that's what James said, he was justified when he offered Isaac. In other words, his faith was proven because he trusted God and did what he said to do. God wants me to kill my son. And I love my son. But I also know God said that he's going to make a nation out of me. In Genesis 12. But I also know that God said this nation is going to come through Isaac. He said that specifically in Genesis. So Abraham reasons this thing through and he says, if God said he's going to make a nation out of me and he's going to do it through Isaac, somehow, some way, God will take care of this even if I kill my son. Hebrews tells us that Abraham believed God would raise him from the dead if he needed to. Abraham believed God, but listen to me. He obeyed God for one reason, because he trusted God. He had the faith that was real. And that faith was revealed by his works. And James says that's the kind of faith I'm talking about, that's revealed by how you live. Now let's look on the other example. Verse 22, let's go ahead and read it. Seest thou how faith was wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect, was made complete. It shows us. And no. Notice, seest thou. You see, you can tell me you have faith. I don't see your heart. I don't know your heart. I have to see what you do. I have to watch how you live to find out if you got faith or not. And that's what James is saying. People can see faith when people live in faith. Look on in verse 23. The scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Now notice, and ye see then how that by works man is justified, not by faith only. Ye see. Then the next example, verse 25. Likewise also was not Rahab the harlot justified by works when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way. Rahab the harlot is James' second example. He's in the courtroom. He's examining this fellow who claims he has faith. So far, there's no evidence in the person's life that he has any faith whatsoever. And he says, here's what real faith is. Look at Abraham. Look at Rahab. Rahab was a harlot. She ran an inn in Jericho. Many times in that day, inns developed into prostitution houses because men were traveling. Rahab was a harlot running a place of prostitution. And Jericho was one of the cities. It was the first city that God said to Israel when they came into the promised land, I want you to destroy Jericho. They sent spies into Jericho to map out the land, to map out the city, to determine their strategy. These spies, while in Jericho, stayed in the inn that Rahab owned. And while the spies are in Rahab's inn, here comes the people of the city looking for the spies, wanting to kill them. And Rahab hides the spies and tells a fib. That's another message. She was in a different culture. Lying was fine with her. It wasn't with God. It was wrong, but it worked. She hid the spies, listen, in danger of her own life. In danger of dying herself, she hid the spies. And when the men were gone, she told the spies, I believe your God. Hear me, faith. I believe what your God said. I know you are coming to our city and you're going to destroy it. When you come, will you remember me and my family? By faith, she's moved. And James uses her as an example of living faith because it was more than just, oh, sure, I believe. Yeah, I believe. But the proof of her believing, the proof of her faith was revealed by what she did. She was putting herself in danger. Listen to me. She was trusting God in a time of danger. That's living faith. That's real faith. And that's what James says. That's what you need to look for in your life. Do you trust God? Do you look for Him? Do you rely on Him? Is He the one you run to? James is saying all that. Look on in verse 26. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. He's just given examples of living faith. Abraham and Rahab. Now he gives an example of dead faith. A dead body. He says, as useless, as worthless as a dead body is. That's how useless and worthless dead faith is. I got a question. If I just say, sure, I believe in God, but it didn't change my life. Sure, I believe in Calvary, but I never trust Him for saving me. Sure, I believe in Jesus. I believe in Jesus all my life, but I never get under conviction and call on Him and ask Him to save me. Got a question. When I die, where will I go? Heaven or hell? I hope you say real quick, hell. Because believing it in my head and accepting the facts, that's dead faith. Living faith is relying, trusting, depending on. And James said, that dead faith is like a dead body. It's useless. So the conclusion is, I guess you... I'm glad to hear that word. I don't know if it means much, but I'll still say it. Living faith is real faith. When we hear the facts, accept them, believe it, and trust, rely on. I put myself in His hands. The reason I believe I'm going to heaven tonight is because I put myself into His hands. That's all. I believed what I heard, and I've trusted Him. The reason I think I'm going to make it through another day is because I believe what I've heard about God, and I'm trusting Him. I'm depending on Him. That's living faith. Dead faith is, oh, sure, yeah, sure, I believe it. But not acting on, not relying on. And James said, that's just like a dead corpse. It's useless. Now, here I am at the end. and they don't know what in the world it means to you. I hope you've gotten some insight tonight, and I guess that's worth the service. But I've never been the kind to want to preach, just give out information. I want it to change our lives. I want it to affect us. I guess I'll say it like this. Are you trusting Him for salvation? Are you trusting Him for today? Are you relying on Him, or are you depending on yourself? How much of your existence, how much of your daily life, your daily routine is really, 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 listen, if you really would examine it, it's really you trying, you working, your plans, your desire, your goals. Oh, He says, I want you to trust me. I want you to rely on me. Let's stand together. Thank you for listening.